Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. It's Monday, July 26th. You are listening to the College Football Daily. My name is Trey Scott. If you came here expecting further coverage of realignment, you might be a little bit disappointed. We cannot allow the changing of college football forever to get in the way of our Across the Country with the College Football Daily series this offseason, in which we are profiling every single Power 5 team. Today, it's North Carolina, so we'll be talking to Greg Barnes of Inside Carolina. We had a really interesting talk. I feel like I always say we had interesting talks with all of our great guests from the 24/7 Sports Network. And we begin with comparing and contrasting Mac Brown from his first time at Carolina and then Texas and then now at Carolina. And then when we talk about UNC's title window right now, most people have them winning the Coastal. To me, it's really a toss-up between them and Miami. Carolina gets Miami at home, so that probably is swaying the votes. Phil Steele picked Carolina to win the Coastal for what it's worth and probably have the right to play Clemson with that. So we'll toss to the interview with Greg in just a second. I guess I probably should talk about other realignment stuff today. I'm recording this on Sunday. It was a pretty quiet weekend. Nothing happened, whatever. I believe on Monday, today is when Texas and Oklahoma will officially extend notice to the Big 12 that they will not be renewing their grant of rights for the 2025 and beyond foreseeable future. And so I really think this week will be about what everybody other than Texas and Oklahoma do in the Big 12. You're going to see some Kansas smoke to the Big 10. I'm all for that. Oklahoma State, Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, are they Pac-12 bound? Is West Virginia ACC bound? Does the Big 12 try to act like it's going to keep standing here and absorb the AAC? Or is the AAC, the American Conference, actually in a better position to absorb the Big 12? I think that's what's coming up next. I was at dinner on Saturday night in Nashville with a few friends, and one's a Georgia Bulldog, the other's a Tennessee Volunteer. And the thing that they were the most fascinated by was the eventual, what this means for college football eventually splitting away, breaking away from the NCAA. And I know Josh Pate over at Late Kick is going to be talking about this on Sunday night, and you'll be able to catch his episodes in the Late Kick Extra with Josh Pate feed on the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network. It's been exciting talking about this new SEC with Texas and Oklahoma. It's been fun to forecast where these other schools could go, talk about these super conferences, but I think it's becoming kind of clear that we're not going to have these four really robust super conferences. We're going to have the SEC, we're going to have the Big Ten, and then the ACC and the Pac-12 are really going to have to make moves to stay competitive. And then if you're like a marquee program, the ACC, like Clemson, and you're not getting as much money because of your poor TV contract and you're watching college football get totally SEC focused, and it's hard to argue that it should be SEC focused. I mean, think about all the teams that are in there and think about the teams that are coming in now. You know, do you try to make an exit for yourself too? So it feels like treacherous waters in college football right now. The last thing anybody wants, I was telling this to the guys on Saturday night, last thing anybody wants is to take away a world in which we care about watching Mac football on a Thursday, or to take away a world in which Purdue even gets the chance to beat Ohio State. Do we really want, we don't really want the 24 best teams to play in one conference and only play each other. I know that the SEC, some of the fans enjoyed last season because of COVID, they only played each other. I know that was a fun round robin type format, but we want the non-conference. We want the variety of college football that is the reason we all fell in love with it. Staying up late and watching Hawaii and you know, get into become fans of West Coast schools and small market players and the Lamar Jacksons of the world. And, you know, we don't want to get too far away from that. And so we'll see what happens this week, next few weeks, next few years. It's crazy. What an absolutely insane summer. And we're going to try to keep the College Football Daily on the tracks here, because we do have a fun 2021 preview season to preview. And we do have quite a few more teams to get to. So anyway, today, the North Carolina Tar Heels, can they improve on 8-4 from a year ago? And more importantly, can they challenge for the ACC championship?
Greg Barnes right now of Inside Carolina. Greg, we appreciate you joining us today. I want to start with Mack Brown. You're on your way after we finish recording this to an in-state Hall of Fame type deal for Mack. I feel like he's probably in every Hall of Fame that exists for a college football coach. I'd love to know, maybe we can play a little compare contrast with what it's like covering Mack Brown right now versus my experience when I was in college at Texas. I got there in 2010, Greg, and that's when things started going off the rails for Mack. And I just remember thinking, this guy who I saw on TV all the time as a happy coach, he'd started to gray. He had started to be really paranoid. He had started to be kind of cranky and grumpy. And you could just tell by the end of the whole thing, the last 3 years, nobody was having any fun. And it's made me so happy to watch him the last few years in Chapel Hill and see a totally rejuvenated, like he just had like, you know, 20 grandkids or something. He seems like he's having the time of his life.
Yeah, for sure. And I can actually one up you a little bit. I'm a good bit older than you. And I was actually in school at North Carolina back in the late 90s in Mack Brown's heyday. And the interesting thing about that time period is he had built North Carolina to a legitimate top 10 program. And yet, because North Carolina has always had the reputation of being this basketball powerhouse, he was not really getting the respect that he deserved. He just wanted to be paid the same amount of money that Bill Guthridge was being paid, which was not happening. And so there was some tension there. And so when he left to go to Texas, all the North Carolina alums at the time were like, see, this is what we could have been. And then to your point, kind of goes sour for him. He gets out, spends 5 years in the media, and comes back to North Carolina, refreshed, rejuvenated, understanding that he put too much of an emphasis purely on winning the last couple of years at Texas. That kind of ground him down. He understood that now at North Carolina, there's much more of this embrace of football. Bubba Cunningham understands the revenue components of that. And so he's actually getting what he wants from a football standpoint. And so all these things have come together, along with the fact that a lot of the alumni that were relevant back in the 90s are now the big power brokers in Chapel Hill now. So it's just kind of like a perfect world for Mack right now. And he's capitalizing.
Feels like he's playing with house money. His legacy is secured, of course. I can't believe he's doing it again in North Carolina. I did not think it was going to go this well. Greg, I'm pretty surprised. Does that speak to how loose he's been, how friendly he's been? I know he's going on the media blitz, and that's what any new coach does. But I feel like I turn on the TV or open up Twitter, and he's talking to somebody. He's smiling about something. He's doing something on TikTok. Maybe to your point, he's not putting such an emphasis on wins and losses, and more so worrying about enjoying the process and building something with a really great culture. I'm just really happy for him, and I think I'm just maybe at a loss for words on this transformation, the house money kind of deal.
But I think at the root of this, he's always been an incredible recruiter. I mean, that's what he did at North Carolina the first time. He dominated in-state recruiting. He did that very quickly at Texas. And so while I had some reservations about him coming back too, because as we've said, really struggled late against Texas, seemed like he kind of aged out of the game, and then really seemed to enjoy ESPN for 5 years. And it was really a matter of, okay, we know he can recruit. What's he going to do in terms of scheme? And the only way I thought it would work is if he brought in young guys who are kind of on the cutting edge of schematics. And that's really what he did with Phil Longo and Jay Bateman. And he's been able to keep them happy. We always talk about, the CEO head coach, right? I think that's a little disingenuous. But he really does allow those guys to be creative and to really push the boundaries of what's going on. He has his hand on everything, for sure. But as long as you can be creative schematically and you can recruit, and he's always been able to do that. I think it has worked. And the fact that he has so much support around here, Sally's from here. They've maintained that house in the mountains for 30 years now, that area out there. So it's a good situation for him. This is a team that won 8 games last year. So we're not talking about a powerhouse yet. I think we have to kind of pump the brakes just a tiny bit. They still have a lot of work to do. But certainly he's got them on a trajectory that a lot of people didn't expect, considering how the last couple of years of the Larry Fedora era went.
Does he talk about that teams are ahead of schedule or I remember at Texas, he did this in like 2008. They were really good. They didn't make it to the Big 12 title game because, some conference standings were messed up. And he was like, well, we'll be better next year. We'll be back next year. Did he say that last year about the Tar Heels? Because when I look at this team, what's not to like? You got Sam Howell for one more year. This feels like the best window right now. And then you're going to turn things over at quarterback and for my money, get Drake May to be an upperclassman, then you've got another great window. But does he talk about teams and cycles like that?
He does. I mean, if you go back to the fall of 2019, he highlighted that the 2021 year had a chance to be special because he understood there were so many young guys playing. At that point in time, you're thinking that Javonte Williams will be back, that De'Ami Brown will probably be back for another year. So he liked a lot of the pieces they have. I think when you add in the fact that Larry Fedora's last couple of defenses just really lacked talent. There's a few guys that went on to play in the league, but not many. And so he knew that he had to get a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, and they've largely done that. And the fact that you have so many guys coming back, to your point, there's the opportunity there. I think for the defense to kind of get this team to where it wants to be and to hit some of those benchmarks that he's kind of alluded to, the young guys really have to play well. They have to take a step forward, which is hard to do. It's a lot to ask from young guys. But certainly he's talked about this year with Sam Howell being just the incredible quarterback that he is. If the pieces around him can be effective and not have some of the letdowns that they've had in past years, then they have a chance to win the Coastal. And if you can win the Coastal, of course, you can challenge Clemson for the ACC crown.
Can you believe Sam Howell's already a junior? I just time flies, and I think he's surpassed all expectations already. One of the faces of college football. It's hard to believe. Let's say everything goes pretty well, but lose to Clemson, whatever. I don't know. What sustains Mac through that? Like if next offseason it is not the buzz of Carolina as a top 10 team, but it's Carolina reloading a little bit. Do you think Mac's okay with that?
I think so. I think he understands that, as you said earlier, he's playing with house money. I don't think anybody thought that North Carolina would be in the conversation for being the Coastal favorite, as they likely will be, and possibly challenging Clemson at this point, 3 years in. And I think getting Sam Howell and for him to be as good as he's been has really, really given them built up a lot of goodwill amongst the fan base, amongst recruits. That's probably been more than he expected coming back. I think the building job was probably bigger than what it's appeared to be because of Sam Howell. He's so good. I do think the defense next year is going to be significantly better than the defense this year. And I think this defense can be pretty good, but I think next year it has a chance to be really good. You do lose Sam Howell, which is a key component, and you're going to lose a lot of pieces on offense because a lot of those offensive linemen are probably going to go pro. But that's where the evaluation comes in. That's where the development comes in. Drake May, they would like, you would think, to be able to say, okay, we went from one North Carolina quarterback to another North Carolina quarterback. We're just going to keep this thing rolling in state. And so maybe offense is not as good next year, but then a year or so after that, you've got that full, complete team that he envisioned when he came back 5 years down the road. So maybe this year could be a little bit of a peak early, but I do think the way that they're recruiting, especially defensively, as you know, if you can recruit defensively and you can recruit a stud quarterback, that'll get you a long way in college football. And this is a matter of filling out the other pieces.
I was talking to somebody about that yesterday. Last question for you, Greg. You look at this schedule for 2021. I know we were looking ahead a little bit just now. It's almost like two parts, but three games. It's at Virginia Tech. Fun Friday night game. I think that's like a touchdown spread. And then in mid-October, Miami at home, bye week at Notre Dame. Is one of those three the games the one you have circled on your calendar, or do you have something else to throw at me?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm just having a hard time buying into the Virginia Tech hype right now. I think the reason that game will be difficult is simply because it's on the road. It's the first game of the year. It'll be against a packed crowd, if you will. Right. They haven't had that since 2019. I think that's the challenge. I don't expect Virginia Tech to really be that good of a team this year. Clearly, Miami's the go-to game. I mean, I think both of those teams are going to be really good. Whoever can win that one's probably going to win the Coastal. I think Notre Dame's a measuring stick game. They had a couple of those last year. Notre Dame and Texas A&M played well through three quarters, but couldn't get it done in the fourth quarter. I think it's a good opportunity for them to see where they stand nationally, because I don't think Notre Dame will be quite as good as they were last year, but that's still a top 10 team. But I also think there's plenty of games that can trip North Carolina up. I think Virginia's going to be pretty good. Pitt's going to be pretty good. And so those are games that I'm really interested to see. Okay, these may not be the Miamis or the Notre Dames, but these are teams that can beat you if you're not at your A level. And that's what Mac Brown has really preached to these guys. It's one thing if you have so much talent, you can just overwhelm your opponents. But when you're just marginally better talent-wise, you've got to play very well to win. And I think they're still trying to learn that, as evidenced by some bad losses last year. I think it's a good schedule for them. I think it's good they do play that Virginia Tech game to start, just because of the hype and all that. But yeah, I think certainly Miami game is number one on the list. And then Notre Dame is probably a close second.
Let's say they run the table or only lose one game and you go into a feels like the rivalry with NC State's really caught fire recently, that on the road Friday after Thanksgiving, that could be a lot of fun. I think it's gonna be a really fun season though, all around in Chapel Hill. Greg Barnes, we appreciate you joining us. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Appreciate Greg Barnes joining us. Again, really fun Carolina team to watch this fall. That opening game at Virginia Tech on Friday night, Lane Stadium. It's going to be hopping, but Carolina should probably win. Anyway, our producer is Lance Glenn. I'm Trey Scott. Have a great Monday. We'll talk to you on Tuesday for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.